This is a tripod broadcast.
Well, let's start recording, so...
We just did.
Okay, cool. I think this is a key show to listen to because it's all about emotional masturbation. Journalistic integrity. It encapsulates everything that we're about.
And I'm sorry.
Now, give that some thought.
Yeah.
With Addison...
I can't be mad at you. You got a haircut.
And Matt. I would recommend that you stop listening right now.
We are now, though.
Say what you just said.
Say what I just said?
Yeah.
Off the air?
Yeah.
Well, I was having a conversation the other day, and somebody was like, who has that amount of time to listen to a podcast, mm-hmm. you know? And I was like, a lot of people that work jobs, sit at a desk, you know, 8 hours a day or whatever it is, listen to podcasts pretty much all day long. That's what I did when I had that kind of job. I just turn it on in the morning and would listen to podcasts until I left.
Mm-hmm. Plus, podcasting is much broader than... The term is much broader than it once was. It's not just
yeah, it is.
It's not just indie guys sitting in like we are right now, sitting in their house.
Well, that's what we
behind
are.
A couple microphones, you know.
Yeah,
talking extemporaneously. It's podcasting is a way for large companies to get the news out there, like NPR.
Yeah.
Most of the people our age who listen to NPR now don't do it on the radio. They download their favorite show off NPR in podcast form.
Yeah.
Whether it's This American Life or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah. Or what's the one at night that I used to like to listen to? It was on like 5 or 6 at night, maybe. Not This American Life, but...
Weekdays or...
Weekdays, yeah.
Weekends.
I think it was kind of a new, not newsy, but it was like, what was the name of that show?
Who was the host?
I don't know, but it was, it's right on the tip of my tongue, too. All Things Considered?
Yep. Yeah. That's a big one, too.
I used to enjoy that.
They do their shows as podcasts.
Yeah.
They release them as podcasts.
I used to listen to that
because,
on the radio.
Yeah.
Because I would get tired of...
You can equate what Netflix has done for television to what podcasting is doing for radio.
Spoken word, yeah.
It's content that is there on your schedule, on your clock.
Right.
I don't have to be there from 4 to 6.
Right.
Every Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
Tuned into 90.7.
Right.
Listening to All Things Considered.
Right.
I can download those 15 hours or 10 hours a week in podcast form and listen to them whenever I want.
Yeah. And yet it's still recorded, because I think when you record is, and I think this would probably be evident in some of our episodes, I think when you record has a big effect on the type of show that it'll be.
Mm-hmm.
Because lately, the last couple of shows, we've been recording in the mornings.
Yeah.
Or mornings or midday, you know.
Yeah.
And
which is why we've sounded stupider.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I feel more sharp at night. But then I'm a night person, so.
Yeah, but I think shows, because if you look at like what's on the radio around like really late at night, mm-hmm. like you have Coast to Coast AM, which is a huge one.
Yeah.
Mark Levin a little bit earlier than that. And then I think there's somebody else that's on really popular in the midnight to like 4 mm-hmm. hour. But conspiracy theories are really popular at night.
Mm-hmm.
Like the night comes alive with conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, because people who have the time to listen to conspiracy theories are up late because they have nothing else to do.
Right.
I mean, people who don't have time for conspiracy theories, who have jobs and who have full lives that
functioning
they can't cram with anything
society.
Else. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, anyways, this is Give That Some Thought.
Hello.
I'm Addison, joining as my co-host, Matt Hume, a man who has been cool since The Walking Dead has.
Yeah. I guess so.
You definitely have.
Trying to figure out the logic in that statement, and I got it. Okay, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've been cool since The Walking Dead has, because it's been a little while since The Walking Dead's been cool.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen this most recent episode, but you told me about it.
Mm, yeah.
Well, you didn't really tell me about it, but it doesn't sound like it brings anything
back. Yeah, It's typical season 4 of Walking Dead, so...
I think that the reason I keep going back to it and bringing it up on TV Teardown and on this show and in my conversations with friends and stuff is it bums me out so bad. Like if like, because I was kind of I was watching Weeds when it got bad. Things get bad. Like yeah. I understand that shows don't last forever. Things go bad.
TV you know? Shows, fruit,
milk. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Marriages.
Yes, it happens.
They just go bad.
But the reason I think The Walking Dead bums me out so much is because I loved it so much at the beginning, and I want it to be good so bad.
Sure, sure, everybody does.
Like, it hurts me in a special hole in my heart that it's not good.
Yeah.
Personally, it does.
What do you,
I really want to tune in and it be, yeah.
Yeah.
And I tune in and I'm just like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I hate it.
Yeah. The same thing that happened, the same feelings you're feeling right now is what happened to Heroes for me. Season one.
Okay, right. I think that happened for a lot of people.
Tim Kring is the showrunner. Great show. Felt like you were telling a story that was bigger than a single episode, and it was bigger than the first season, and it was going to last the entire series.
Right.
And it was an interesting story. We felt like you were going to, these characters were going to be with you for a while.
Right.
And then you had a bunch of them die off, and then you get bogged down in drama, specifically drama around one central character,
and then it's just not there.
And then it's over.
Well,
and it just didn't. It wasn't so much about the heroes as so much about
interpersonal drama.
Yeah, interpersonal drama.
Well, let's curb this discussion by a quick plug for our other show, TV Teardown.
Yeah, if you want to hear us talk about television
and have those kinds of conversations all the time.
Yeah.
That's what that show is. We just recently, the most recent episode we put up, we talked about True Detective, which is just a massive, just mind melt of an HBO show.
Yep, watch it. Watch it.
Probably the darkest thing I've ever watched. It was really a lot of thought there.
Yeah.
But
it's an awesome show, and I really enjoyed it.
Great show. Anyways, yeah, we talk about that. We talked about House of Cards season 2. I think we're going to talk about a lot of stuff. We've got so much on our plate that we want to talk about on that show. So tune in there. It's pretty cool. But
yep.
Anyways, the first story that I want to talk about this week or bring up, which according to the Supreme Court's blog, because they have a blog, it's been around, like this issue has been up since September 19th, that's when the first thing was filed, September 19th, 2013. But now I guess it's taken a center stage again because it's moving to a decision, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what are we in, March? Yeah, man, they post everything that happens on the Supreme Court blog. That's pretty cool, actually. But anyways, and that's this Hobby Lobby story, which from what I understand, according to what I've seen and what I've heard, and according to the Supreme Court blog, what it says is issue, and it just says whether the Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993, 42 U.S.C. 2000, yada, 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 which provides that the government, quote, shall not substantially burden a person's exercise of religion, unquote, unless that burden is the least restrictive means to further a compelling governmental interest, allows a for-profit corporation to deny its employees the health coverage of contraceptives to which the employees are otherwise entitled by federal law based on the religious objections of the corporation's owners.
Yeah, for a person.
That's the question.
Yeah. It
now,
shall not unnecessarily burden a person.
Real quick.
A person. And
hold
it all
on.
Goes back to...
Hold on. Real quick. To me...
Mm.
Just like everything, there's two sides to this.
No, there's not. There's one side. There's the right side. The other side is wrong. So there's only one side.
Hold on. In a free country or a pseudo-free country, shouldn't you be able to make the decision of, as a business owner, whatever that business is, in this case, it's Hobby Lobby, it could be whatever, Quick Trip,
shouldn't you be able to
McDonald's.
Make the decision to break the law?
No. Should you be able to make the decision
and break the law
based on religion because you own your company and you have your religious
Hobby Lobby is a publicly traded company, right?
I don't know if they are
yeah,
or not.
It is.
I guess they are.
It is. It's
but isn't that still between you and your shareholders?
No.
Why not?
Because it's a publicly traded company.
But then so. To me, that's more accountability than anything because then you're then people don't have to buy your stock and you can suffer the
sure,
the physical
sure.
ramifications of whatever decision you just had to make.
Therefore, it's not your company. It's your shareholders' company. It's a publicly owned and traded company. Okay, so we're not talking about Hobby Lobby's personal private beliefs. Okay,
right.
The one reason why they have a case here, Hobby Lobby has a case.
Uh-huh.
The only reason they have a case here is because of Citizens United, because corporations are people, quote unquote. Okay, so because Citizens United was passed in order for large companies to be able to donate as much money as they wanted to politicians. That's why it was passed. Because if corporations are people,
uh-huh,
and money equals free speech, both of those things are wrong. Money does not equal free speech. And corporations
right.
are not people.
Uh-huh.
But because corporations are people and money equals free speech, these two logical leaps that the Supreme Court took
uh-huh.
means that that a corporation
mm-hmm.
can have political and private views, religious and political views that aren't beholden to their shareholders or to the Constitution.
But that's still between them and their shareholders, though. And their shareholders can dump all their stock if they want.
Okay.
That can still happen. So who?
But you're a public company,
right?
Okay, operating in the public sphere.
Uh huh. But I don't have to go into Hobby Lobby.
No, so you don't.
It's not.
But
it's
you
not
do
like
have to follow the law, and when the law says that you have to provide health insurance for your employees,
uh huh,
or when the law says that you do or don't, but you can't dictate.
But the law
also
says that the government cannot.
But the law
cannot
says
exercise
the law
anything
says
about religion.
Before this, the law said that you can't dictate what kind of health care your employees receive
uh-huh.
when they're on your health insurance plan.
Uh huh.
Okay, you can't dictate that.
Uh-huh.
So if they need a surgery or medicine for AIDS treatment
that you don't agree with or whatever,
and you don't like gays,
right?
Then you know, or whatever,
you have nothing to say about it. Yeah. So, see,
or if,
but that's what I mean by two sides, because I get that.
Uh-huh.
I get that, and yeah. I do think, to be honest, that's probably because if you work for a company, no matter who it is—Walmart, Hobby Lobby, Fortune 500, whatever it is—if you work for a company and you have health care, you should be able to use it as the health care dictates.
Yeah.
Not the company, because the company doesn't matter, and it's a part of your package because you work there.
Mm-hmm.
Period. That's
what
it.
What your health care plan covers.
Right.
And they're
but
saying
on the flip side,
Hobby Lobby is saying that they specifically don't want to cover
right.
one part of a health care plan
because
they
of religion.
They have because of their religious standpoint. Yes.
Which the government cannot make a law about.
Mm-hmm.
Which is in the Constitution.
Yes.
So yeah. To me, that's two sides, though. Because if the government can't make a law about religion, then it doesn't matter what a company chooses to cover based on a religious preference.
But you can't discriminate based on religion,
right?
So because Hobby Lobby's founders are discriminating based on their religion, they are discriminating against a certain people group, women that work for them,
who have a different religious belief.
Which, if
than
you
they
think
do.
About Hobby Lobby, probably the majority of their employees are women.
Well, that's the most sexist thing you've ever said. But
think
no,
about
I'm
it.
Kidding. No,
in,
I get what you're saying.
Real world,
right.
real world terms.
Right.
Okay.
No, you're probably right.
Think about who. I'm not going to go walk. If I need a job, I'm not going to walk into a Hobby Lobby. Number one, I'm not going to get hired. I have no experience in retail. Number
right.
one. Number two, I have no interest in hobbies and, or lobbies.
And,
okay.
Right.
Both
one of the two.
Well, I mean,
and mixed.
Yeah.
It's only. More disinterest.
Especially hobbies
part.
That you have to do inside of a lobby. I've never gotten that. I don't know why there's a national chain built on that fact. Like, how many freaking hobbies can you do inside of a lobby?
Right.
Like what?
Good
like,
point.
Like flipping coins into the fountain? Like what? Like counting the number of people walking by with brown shoes? What can you do in a lobby?
Are those
that is
hobby-based?
Though?
That is hobby-based? Right. Yeah.
You know?
Anyways.
Like elevator spotting? What is it? I don't get it.
I don't know.
No, but it's discriminating.
You can't really build like model trains.
What this comes down to is Citizens United.
Uh-huh.
Corporations are people.
Uh-huh.
And corporations and free speech equals money.
Both right,
of those
which,
things.
Again,
both
of those
things
right,
are wrong.
Right.
And it's also based on religious discrimination. The ability
see,
of
still,
my religious preference to discriminate against you. And we just had this law in Arizona that went just like lightning quick through the Senate and through the House in Arizona saying
right.
that business owner basically saying that Hobby Lobby is right, that business owners can discriminate against somebody else based on their religion. So if you are a religious person who doesn't want to serve somebody who is gay or somebody who is Muslim
right.
or somebody who is fill in the blank, you can deny somebody service based not on their not on anything that they've done, but simply your
their
attitude
right.
and your idea
towards
of who
their
that person
preference.
Is.
Right. Which shouldn't be.
So it's completely illogical. It's making an excuse to defend a faith that doesn't need defending. Conservative Christians and the evangelical right in this country
uh-huh.
are one of the most powerful special interest groups in this country.
Right.
If not the most powerful. And everywhere you turn, this same special interest group is crying foul, crying that they're being persecuted, just like the gun lobby. The gun lobby in this country is one of the most, it's probably the most powerful lobby in the world, period.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Speaking of hobby lobbies, there, that's a real lobby.
Right.
They're one of the most powerful lobbies in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yet at every turn, anytime anyone wants to make a gun law, it's a huge deal for them, and they cry foul, and they say, we're being persecuted, we're being
really
persecuted.
Sensitive. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's this that's that same tone.
Right.
That the religious rights and the pro-life movement is taking. And I hate to just point the finger at the pro-life and say it's your fault, but it is their fault.
Getting
for,
back to
for,
the
for not fostering this idea that they're being persecuted. And when it's not them being persecuted, it's the people who are making the hard decision about whether to terminate a pregnancy.
Uh-huh. Anyways.
Or whether or not to use birth control.
Getting back to this original
which
thing.
Which isn't a hard decision. That's just being a responsible freaking person.
Right. But
using a condom, wrapping it up with a jimmy, or using some sort of birth control.
Right.
It's, yeah. Anyway, I digress.
But getting back to this original issue, though, I really do see two sides to it, because it just seems like a dangerous step to take when you say that no matter who it is, whether you're a business owner or not, that you can't make a decision based on your religious preference, no matter what that is.
Uh-huh.
And I guess the only the spot where we differ, I'll say this, it's the clear spot where we differ, if I had to line it out, would be you use the word discriminate over and over again. And I don't necessarily think it's discriminating, because mm-hmm. Discrimination is more of a you're not allowed to do this or this. Like it's if Hobby Lobby were trying to say, if we find out you're on birth control, you're getting fired, mm-hmm. that's discrimination.
No, discrimination.
Hold on. Because then you don't have the right to have that job.
Uh-huh.
You can still have the job. It's just going to come with because the business owner has these religious beliefs. It's going to come with the stipulation that I'm not going to provide things to you that I believe, according to my religious beliefs, are mm-hmm. a sin.
But
when we have a law
wherein everyone is entitled to health care, mm-hmm. Affordable Care Act,
mm-hmm.
okay, so businesses and the government are going to pay for that,
mm-hmm.
and it's a law that if you need health care, you should be able to get it.
Right.
And you can get it. It doesn't stipulate what kind of health care that is. Secondly, let's qualify some terms here. Discriminate. Mm-hmm. Okay? What does discriminate mean to you?
Well, to me, discriminating is not allowing someone to do something or be something because of who they are. Or because of a choice that they've made about mm-hmm. about their beliefs or whatever that has nothing to or their color
discrimination
has nothing to
discrimination
do with.
Is differential treatment of another person based on your beliefs,
right?
Your beliefs about
of who they are, Muslim okay. or
so
Christian
does,
or whatever.
It has no bearing on what they actually are, who they actually are. It's simply your treatment of them based on your beliefs.
Uh huh.
Okay. So in this, Hobby Lobby is discriminating.
Right.
According to the textbook dictionary term of discrimination, Hobby Lobby is totally discriminating against people.
Right.
And we know that discrimination is bad, therefore liberals right, I win.
Okay, I'll move on then.
No. Not moving on. I mean, this is kind of a serious issue, but once again, for me, it goes back to Citizens United. Corporations are not people.
Right.
They don't have the same rights as people do.
Uh-huh.
You give them constitutional rights. You give them abilities to do things that they shouldn't be able to do, which is donate endlessly to politicians and
right.
to their super PACs.
Right.
to be able to cry foul when they have to play by the rules that every other business has to play by.
Right.
It's not like Hobby Lobby is the only one who has to provide birth control.
No, every company that provides
every other company
does.
Has to.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And the only thing Hobby Lobby is doing is hurting themselves by picking this fight.
Or helping themselves.
Is Chick-fil-A still donating bucos of money to all these conservative causes, or are they talking about it anymore?
I don't think they're talking about
it anymore.
No,
they're trying to play it low. They're trying to kind of guide under the radar because
right.
they don't want that bad press because it's hurting their business.
No, but even still, looking at that incident though, like they had a 15% profit increase the year of the boycott.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so nothing really happened. If anything, it helped them. Number one. Number two, that was just a private man who happens to run a business and said that he believes something that's in the Bible.
He doesn't even run the business anymore,
or used to, or whatever.
Yeah,
but still, what doesn't he have the right to do that?
No, the Chick-fil-A thing was blown out of proportion. He Dan Gacy?
Kathy. Dan Truett Cathy was the founder, and Dan is his son, I believe.
Yeah,
but even still, I can go on my Twitter account and say that I believe the Bible or the ancient writings of whoever, mm-hmm. and that's my freedom to do that as an individual. Yeah. And people can, the effect that has on whatever business I run is something that I'm willing to take by making that statement,
mm-hmm.
right? Same thing with the whole Duck Dynasty thing. Like he said, well, I happen to believe in the Bible. It's your right to do so. You're an American. You can believe whatever you want. You can believe in anything.
Well, let's go in a different direction for a second. Did Jesus, when he was about to go into Jerusalem and he sent the disciples before him
uh-huh.
with some money
uh-huh.
and he was like, get these things, prepare these things, get
yeah,
this stuff
get the
ready.
Donkey, right.
Yeah. Did he say, go grab the donkey and make sure everybody knows that I'm the Messiah and I'm coming into town and they better believe what I believe? No, he just said, go. He didn't tell them to go spread their religious beliefs, okay?
Right.
He never said, go indoctrinate. Go and make disciples. I've
but
said that
see,
before.
To me, saying it is not necessarily indoctrination, especially in the case of the Duck Dynasty thing. That was someone who put a mic in his face and asked him point blank the question,
mm-hmm.
which if someone answers, how is it really on them?
Pretty much known at this point, like they chopped up his answer.
Right.
Yeah, they took
well, and
two
and
or
they
three sentences.
The question anyways.
They took two or three sentences out of his answer, they sensationalized it, and they left out the context. And
right.
so just it's the big lie and the big mistake of all media today, almost all media and most news is no context.
Yeah.
Leaving
right.
out the context. And if you leave out information, it's lying.
Yeah, you're lying. Right. Yeah.
You are misrepresenting the facts. I.e. lying by leaving out the context of the situation. So that to me is not a big deal because it was just simply a sensationalized headline and news story
right.
For a week. The Hobby Lobby thing is because it goes back to Citizens United, which is completely unconstitutional. Corporations are not people.
Right.
They don't have the same rights as people. They're run by people.
Yeah.
They have rights to other things, and they have the rights given to them by the business laws and the other laws in this
right.
country, but they don't have the right to.
Well, and my only real question at that point is: so, if you run a business, in what ways? I mean, obviously, it comes from a religious point of view.
Yeah,
that they don't want to provide this.
If you don't want to provide birth control, uh-huh. then. Become a pastor and lead a church or work full time in the ministry, but you're choosing to become a businessman, which means you're choosing to have a business that's in the public eye and is beholding to your customers,
right.
And also beholding to the to laws of business.
But see,
which means you understand from the get go that there are some laws that you are going to have to observe and abide by that you don't necessarily believe in, right?
Yeah, but. Even now, like if they were to make that decision, if it wasn't even a Supreme Court issue, let's just say they came out and said it and they're like, well, hey, this is how we religiously feel. We're not going to provide birth control. Have a nice day.
Uh-huh.
Customers can go there or not go there based on that or anything else.
Yeah.
To me, that is the ultimate. If your customers and the public as a whole want to bury your company, then they have the freedom to do so.
Yeah.
And if that happens to be based on a loudmouth religious preference that you happen to state, then so be it.
Yeah. Here's another thing, too.
But, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, the guy who...
So why not just leave it up to that?
The guy who founded Hobby Lobby or who runs it now, the guy who's
yeah,
saying...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, whatever his name is. Do you,
Green, I think. Okay. I don't know his first name. We're really informed over here.
Yeah.
Tripod Broadcasting.
He definitely believes what he believes.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you something else that he definitely wants.
Mm-hmm.
He wants Hobby Lobby to fund birth control.
Why is that? What do you mean?
Do you know how much more it costs to put somebody on maternity leave than it does to pay for birth control? You know how cheap birth control is compared to sending just one person
on
maternity leave?
So just logically, he should...
From a business standpoint?
From a business... Okay. So that's our message to him.
Yeah.
Just look at dollars and cents here.
Uh-huh.
It's very simple.
Plus, from a business standpoint, and I'm just saying this from a business standpoint, and these are biological facts, okay?
Right. When
birth
women
control,
have kids, they go crazy.
No, listen. Birth control helps to regulate the menstrual cycle.
Uh-huh.
And you can... It's not so erratic. Some women have very erratic periods, whatever. It helps to regulate the menstrual cycle in terms of time and flow.
Right.
Stay with me. Stay
I'm
with me,
here.
Dear listeners.
I'm here.
Okay. All right. So
next
sometime,
week
some,
on Give That Some Thought with Dr. Matt.
Matt apologizes to women. No. So when you have that time of the
any
month.
Any women out there, please tweet
when you
at
have
Matt
that time
with
of the
information
month,
about your periods.
Listen, when you have that time of the month for a woman, you tend to feel a little bit off, right? You get bloated. You get maybe get a headache. You don't feel 100%, right?
Right.
You're
right.
More likely to call in. Hobby Lobby, by giving out birth control.
More scheduled, more standard work.
Less
work hours.
Less
yep.
call-ins.
Less call-ins, yep.
Less sick days uh-huh. by female employees. Plus, even if when they have the sick days, they still know when the sick days are going to come because they have regulated menstrual cycles.
Right. Boom.
And they can know when to have the bear guards there.
Right.
To keep away the bears during a certain time of the month.
Because bears can smell the menstruation.
Exactly.
Right.
They can smell the menstruation.
Right. Now that we've broken that down,
yeah.
About as simple
this
as we
is,
can.
This has been Your Body, Your Rights with Matt, disseminating the best in medical information from a woman's standpoint.
Right. That's excellent.
Yeah, so, Hobby Lobby just needs to get on board and swallow the morning after pill.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. It's not about birth control. I think it's about the morning after pill. It's about abortions.
Well, because everyone knows that the morning after pill, when you take it, it disintegrates into a bunch of tiny, tiny men carrying flamethrowers that then go and attack the conception, mm-hmm. the conceived, what is a child,
yeah.
right at conception, and then they attack that with flamethrowers. And
yeah.
No one wants that.
They're
Would you attack a 2-year-old with a flamethrower?
No, you wouldn't.
Of course not.
No.
Of course not. So
called,
why would you do it with a
they're
pill?
They're called unicorns.
Unicorns.
Uda. Corns.
Corns.
As in uterus.
Uterus.
Corns.
Corns. Unicorns. Yeah.
And they ride in with their flaming horn.
Right. Yeah, which is a flamethrower
uh-huh.
on their head.
And they ride around the uterus.
Yes.
Just gallop
just
around
searching
the uterus.
For any life form
uh-huh.
and extinguishing it.
Yep.
Yep. That's how birth control works.
Are you 486?
Yes.
Morning after pill.
That's
I can't remember. I can't believe I remembered like the actual like script.
One
name
of the first
it.
Ones, yeah.
Well, yeah, it was.
I mean, I think there's a ton now, but yeah.
Yeah, but are you 486 was the
actual
first one
with the unicorns.
Yeah.
With the flame in them, mm-hmm. right? And any life form in there, they can
yeah.
just they torch it out.
The other morning after pills that came later. They're just regular pills that you know.
Yeah.
Kill babies.
Kind of like a vitamin. Just a baby-killing vitamin.
Well, what would that be? Vitamin
Yes,
okay.
That's what it is.
Gotcha.
That's what it says on the bottle when you go to
vitamin
like your CVS. Yeah.
It's the sound of a baby's trachea being closed shut for the final time.
That got really dark.
This is like the True Detective of our shows. It's just dark, baby darkness.
Yeah, just very dark.
Yeah, the heart of baby darkness.
Yeah. Moving on, you said something that I thought was the perfect segment of this, and I don't remember what it was.
And then we glossed over it and forgot about it. Okay.
Yeah. But anyways, the next story I wanted to talk about, and this particular story is from the Washington Times by Paul Elias, the Associated Press. And there's a bigger, broader point that I want to make here that I'm going to make based on this. I remember what you said. You remember how you said basically everything is just a big scam?
Mm-hmm.
What were you saying that about? That wasn't even on the show. That was before we started recording. Wasn't it?
Maybe.
Oh, you were talking about Christian music. That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Well, anyways.
Just like pop music, it's formatted completely to appeal.
To sell.
Yeah.
And the sell, it's kind of like a Kesha thing. The sell, the S in sell,
yeah,
is the dollar sign.
To me, Casting Crowns is no different than One Direction. It's the same type of music. It's the same ballpark.
I think it's to sell to a certain... It's a different group, yeah, certainly.
Yeah. Who's the
And there's a different
who's
meaning
the top
to
female
it.
Vocal listening Christian music today?
Oh, I don't
who
know.
Who has the most number one single, a female act who has the number one singles on Christian music?
I couldn't
today.
Tell you. I really couldn't. Okay. There's a small section of Christian music I listen to.
Yeah.
And most of that is old rock that I quote unquote grew up on. Your Skillet, your DC Talks.
Yeah.
I listen to some new stuff.
Yeah. Anyway, I have a very low opinion of Christian music.
Well, I have a very low opinion of music, the music industry. And I mentioned this to you before we came on the air when I was
talking
about iHeartRadio.
I think the music industry is like any other industry that's trying to sell a product to the most people as possible.
And it's just what people forget is that, and this bugs me about radio and TV too, because I had a conversation with a friend the other day where we were talking about some top, where news comes from online and things like that. And he was talking about, you know, Fox News versus CNN and things like that. And I was like, the problem with Fox News is viewership. The problem with the people that watch Fox News is that they think, and whether that's from the whole
they
fair
believe
and
they're
thing,
well informed.
Well, they and the same thing goes for CNN. Don't get me wrong, but they think that they're
no,
getting
no. People
some...
who watch CNN know exactly what they're watching. They're watching airport bus station filler.
But that's that. Well, yeah, but
the people who watch MSNBC and the people who watch Fox News, however, believe that they're actually watching
right
and unbalanced. Unbiased news when it's actually
that,
unbalanced.
I said that to him, and I said that to say that what people what, and I used the hashtag. I just said what the right forgets is that for an outlet like Fox News or whatever, someone's writing the checks, and when it comes to media, whoever's writing the checks is dictating what goes on the air.
Yeah.
And don't think that they're not.
Yeah.
Because if you think that they're not, you're blindly fooling yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. If you're consuming
so
a type of media.
So who owns Fox News, Addison? Rupert Murdoch.
I was going to say Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I really was.
When we look at Rupert Murdoch, he has...
He owns some UK outlets too,
He owns more media than any other single person in the world.
Right. So okay. We need to, what Tripod needs to do is kill him and usurp his media ownership.
Yeah, well,
pretty soon it'll just be our faces on the Fox News channel 24/7.
We, like Fox News, are the foremost face of a war.
Right.
Our war is simply the war on Rupert Murdoch, whereas Fox News is the war on decency and logic and fact. But no,
you're in a rare, just full of piss and vinegar mood today. Like
Rupert Murdoch owns the largest media conglomerate in the United States, which is Fox.
Right.
In terms of viewership and just largest period, he owns the largest media conglomerate in the UK and the largest media conglomerate in Australia. Funny thing about all three of those locations and all three of those media conglomerates in all three of those countries, also a lot of New Zealand too, but Fox News is always on the right of the argument in all three of those countries.
Mm-hmm.
Rupert Murdoch's media outlet
right.
and outlets are always to the right. right of the argument
right.
In any of those countries, which kind of tells you all you need to know about Fox Broadcasting and Rupert Murdoch is that it is all about a message and is coming down from the top. And
Which, like I said, every media outlet that is owned by some corporation or some person who runs a corporation, someone's writing the checks.
Yeah.
And make no mistake that the person that writes the checks dictates what side of things the message comes on.
Yeah.
Period.
Do you know why Piers Morgan came to the United States?
Because the UK hated him,
yes.
Maybe?
Yes.
Wait, is that really it?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Do you know why?
No, huh?
He got kicked out. He got blacklisted from UK media.
I believe that entirely. I hate him so much.
The Rupert Murdoch cell phone hacking scandal.
Right.
Wherein people who work for Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah. Broke into some voicemails and things.
Broke into voicemails of people.
Right.
Who were missing.
Right.
There's several cases of these girls going missing.
Right.
And so the first thing Fox News did was hack into their cell phones to see where they were, mm-hmm. who was talking to them, listen to voicemails, stuff like that. Piers Morgan was embroiled in that whole scandal.
Right.
He was the one treating it like real information and not hacked cell phone information.
Right.
So that's why one of the reasons why he was blacklisted in the UK. But that's what Rupert Murdoch does, is that, you know, those kind of dirty, underhanded things. Anyway, we were talking about something else before we got off on Rupert Murdoch.
Well, yeah, because I was going to move this on to the next thing. San Francisco, a California state senator who was lauded for his efforts to make government more transparent and authored gun control legislation. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a couple of quotes that I heard on the radio this morning from this guy. He was very much, he apparently, speaking of Piers Morgan, he wrote something or commended Piers Morgan on his work or his sort of viewpoint after the whole Sandy Hook thing about guns and everything. And mm-hmm. This guy was arrested Wednesday and accused of conspiracy to deal firearms and wire fraud. So he basically, and his name is Senator Leland Yee. The allegations against State Senator Leland Yee were outlined in an FBI affidavit in support of a criminal complaint against him and 25 other people. The affidavit was unsealed on Wednesday as Yee was scheduled to appear in court. Yee performed, quote-unquote, official acts in exchange for donations from undercover FBI agents as he sought to dig himself out of a $70,000 debt incurred during a failed San Francisco mayoral bid, according to court documents. Yee is also accused of accepting $10,000 in January 2013 from an undercover agent in exchange for his making a call to the California Department of Public Health in support of a contract under consideration with the agency. So he's doing all kinds of secret stuff. And then later on, the article goes in to talk about how he was basically trying to move highly illegal firearms from Russia and other places in exchange for a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
While publicly saying that firearms are killing people and innocent people, and sort of playing off the whole Sandy Hook tragedy, and railing against firearms and using it as a platform against firearms, when he was trying to deal them to the highest bidder.
So we have a case of a politician.
Correct. Yes, a politician
saying one thing in public.
Yes,
that
to the people
that his constituents want to hear.
Yes,
And
a very emotional thing for people. A tragedy where
kids
get killed.
And then at the
same
time,
right
under the table.
Yes,
doing the
behind people's
doing the fiscally paying. I guess you could say the fiscally. Not responsible, but the fiscally. What's the term I'm looking for?
Benefiting.
Fiscally beneficial, thing.
Yeah, correct.
Wow,
it's groundbreaking. It really is unbelievable. It's hard
to
understand.
I don't know if there's ever been an instance of one single politician in the United States, the entire history of the United States, ever doing that exact same thing, because they're all doing that exact same freaking thing.
Right. Well, because I don't have any necessarily vested interest in this story.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've talked about the gun control thing before, but I wanted to bring it up just to say that at this point, like
the best, I'm telling you this right now, okay?
The best defense is a good offense.
No, the best method of gun control.
Is hitting what you aim at.
No, the best method of gun control is strong forearms, because you know a good solid grip,
right?
Making sure it doesn't move. This is the best way to control for gun control,
right?
It's just strong forearms, like any working man should have,
right?
You know.
No, I brought this up to say that you know at this point, is everybody freaking doing this? Like, is every single politician just doing this? Like, I don't.
Yeah. Yeah, they all are.
I mean, if you're a politician and you're not making secret, like, backroom deals for money or some semblance of power, like, what? You must just go to bed at night and feel unfulfilled and unsatisfied.
No, I think they feel very fulfilled and very satisfied because they got what they want.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, the attitude is, in politics now, is if you go into politics, you go into politics for you. And it's all about what you can get out of it. So if...
Why aren't we doing that? We should do that.
Yeah, I don't want to.
Oh.
I'm not in life for what I can get out of it. Well, I am. Never mind. But what I want out of it, I don't want any of those things. I don't want power. No.
Yeah, no. It's just interesting. It just
I would like to say that my reasons for what I want in life is altruistic. But I mean, I don't know.
But certainly, there's still an aspect of life that is self-serving, even by the very nature of most of the things we do. Yeah,
all of life is self-serving.
Anyways, but though, that was the only point I wanted to make. Is everybody doing this? That's what hope do we have of? Because it used to be, I think we're kind of at a certain point we were on a rolling kind of 20-year. Well, most of the scandals are around Republicans. Well, most of the scandals are around Democrats. Mm-hmm. I feel like it would kind of flop back and forth and go back and forth. Why that is, I'm sure there's probably a bigger, deeper conspiracy theory there. But it seemed like that it would kind of go back and forth. And now it's just all the time, just across the board, mm-hmm. Republicans, Democrats, it doesn't matter. Everyone's sort of doing all of this stuff on their own. And
the United States probably won't be around for very long. I mean, unless we destroy China. That's the only way. Our money is flimsy. The dollar is weak. Foreign policy is shit. In that we just throw money at it like some trust fund baby.
Yeah.
Here you go, have some money.
You're in a great mood today. And,
well, you know, you tell a country like Afghanistan,
uh-huh.
right?
Yeah.
Or like Pakistan, that's been basically until about 100 years ago, it's been completely tribalist. It's been self-contained, right?
Right.
Their own self, small micro economies. Like it has nothing. They have had nothing to do with the rest of the world. You introduce the Western element, and they don't want it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have all this fighting going on, and then you just say, "Oh, here's some money, so you can build infrastructure," which they don't always want.
Right?
You could be just like to have a medical system just like the West. Well, they don't want that.
Right?
You know, they don't want the West in their countries. Which is a perfectly fine view for them to have, but we want to be everywhere. But I mean, Cambodia didn't want the West in their countries. You know, China doesn't want the West in their countries. North Korea doesn't want the West.
Yeah,
a lot of places in South America. Like, why do we feel that the quote unquote free market and the democratic mindset
is for everybody?
Is for everybody? It's not. It's barely for us at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, what is the democratic mindset? What good is the democratic mindset and the free market economy doing for the marginalized in our society? I mean, what is supposed to make this country so great is that everybody has an opportunity, right?
Right.
But no, not everybody in this country has an opportunity. There are severely marginalized people groups in this country.
Right. I think it's gotten to a point where it's pretty segmented. And now it doesn't matter because stories just like this, you know, you can change the words around and things are a little different. That happens all the time too, where politicians and people, for 15 years, we've seen a party in the United States run entirely on race,
mm-hmm.
entirely almost on race. And yet at the end of the day has failed to provide them with anything.
Yeah.
If you look at the stats.
But it's not about giving people a leg up or giving people equality in a welfare state.
Right.
It's about giving them the opportunity to be better.
Right.
And in order to give somebody an opportunity to make more money or to live in a better area or to have a better quality of life,
right,
you have to be fair.
Yeah. And well, no
you
one
to,
is.
You, exactly. You have to say that this guy over here who owns his own house and makes $150,000 a year and has four cars mm-hmm. and a large 401k. You have to give him the same rights and give him the same availabilities that you give the guy who has nothing.
Right.
And that's not the case in this country. We know that the guy who has all these things is much has more opportunities than the guy over here. And it's not about income inequality.
Right.
It's about the fact that income in this country has not moved for the lowest of the low has not moved in the past 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's stayed at the same percentage. So when you have the bottom 20-25% of the population who aren't getting paid the same and whose money is worth less than they were 50 years ago, that's when you have a problem. And so what has happened is out of control inflation.
Mm-hmm.
We say money is worth so much more than it is, and so the people who have a lot of it keep on making more and more.
Which is a government and
it.
A corporate move.
Yeah,
that, keep that inflation,
making more and more like of it.
Right.
And the people who don't have a lot of it stay where they were 20 years ago, 25 years ago.
Right.
And the only way to fix the whole problem is to go the old Ron Paul route and
right.
And the Fed.
Yeah.
Kill the Federal Reserve, get rid of the central banking, and kick all the bankers out of America.
And everybody has to use Bitcoin.
No, just everybody has to go back to using gold.
And Bitcoin.
Or, you know.
Bitcoin, it's digital gold.
Yeah.
The more you know.
I like to go back to like farm coin. Like, oh.
farm coin.
Hey, Mr. Dentist, I need my tooth fixed. Can I give you two chickens for you to get rid of this, scrape out this cavity here for me?
Oh, is that the going rate?
Two chickens.
Basically, the going rate.
Two chickens.
I mean, if there's more anesthesia or whatever,
yeah.
You're looking at a couple of hens and a chicken.
Like if I need a root canal, that's
chickens.
That's one goat, two chickens, and a half a bushel of beets.
My God.
Yeah.
So the price has really gone up for a root canal.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I'm on a farm where I've got 40 goats already. One goat. I mean, that's not going to do a whole lot for me.
It's a fair point. It's a fair point.
I mean, I still have my goat milk.
And then,
I'm hoarding my goat milk.
Exactly. And that dentist can use your
goat
to feed
his
kid
cheese.
Goat cheese and goat milk and things like that.
Exactly.
Right.
And
yeah.
Now he has his own little microeconomy of dairy, of goat dairy.
Right.
That he can then build upon his vast empire.
Right. Because, and let's say by mistake, you give him a pregnant goat, then he has his own goats.
Yeah.
He has, and his goat has kids, and then he can use those to buy other things.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a bad system, man.
A goat-based economy.
A goat-based economy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on board to give it a shot, if you are.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
What could we?
By the way, don't forget those two goats you owe me for lunch last week.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I do. Two goats? No.
Come on, man.
No, that wasn't that good of a lunch.
It was a nice meal.
It wasn't that
great
good of a lunch.
Great conversation. I paid that guy a goat and a chicken for the lunch.
Actually, the last time we had lunch, I paid, if I remember.
That's true.
Those
you
firehouse
did.
Subs.
We had the firehouse subs. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what did that run you? Goat and a chicken.
I think it was like $22, which would have been a chicken and a half.
Chicken and a half. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So wait, if you're giving if it's a chicken and a half, is that one live chicken and then the other one it's just?
Well, obviously,
it's a dead chicken.
Yeah, obviously.
Right.
I'm not paying them in live chickens. I'm paying them in dead chickens.
Really? Why
wouldn't
you pay them in live chickens? I think I would want live chickens.
Yeah, but these are chickens that have died, and then I'm just trying to pass them off as, you know.
Oh, yeah, I just killed them.
Of course.
I just killed them. Right. Like,
no.
I just slaughtered these this morning, when in reality,
no.
They've been dead in a shed for 7 or 8 days.
No, not that long. A day.
Okay, a day or two.
Yeah.
Right.
But on Matty Cake's Goat Dairy Farm, we've had a little bit of a problem with
chicken AIDS. It's kind
of
running
not
rampant.
Disease. We have a fox that got in the hen house a couple nights ago.
Fox in the hen house.
Yep. Yeah.
Typical problem.
So, yeah, it has some fox bite marks on it, sure. But, you know, I mean, once you cook it, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah. Come on. I mean, you'd throw it in a pot with everything. You know, defeather that guy, throw him in the pot with everything else.
Just like with regular chicken, you bring it up to at least 165 degrees, cook thoroughly throughout.
Right. No
and
raw.
Cut
open the thickest part.
Uh-huh.
No raw. You're good.
That gets rid of...
The fox AIDS.
It gets rid of salmonella and also the fox AIDS.
Right. So salmonella and fox AIDS, equally dangerous when consuming chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
We should have covered this last week. Dolly Parton mutant chickens.
That's actually what the fox said.
That
I have AIDS.
Is that what he said?
That's what he said.
I'm glad we finally got boiled that down.
Mm-hmm. What did the fox say?
I have AIDS.
I have AIDS.
Yeah.
No, he whispered it like Tom Hanks in Philadelphia. I have AIDS.
Last story. Last thing we're going to cover. Yeah, I feel like I'm going to have to drag you down off of your soapbox.
That's me. Again. That's me loading up my brain. Cracking one into the barrel, or knocking one into the chamber.
Chambering one into that, right, yeah. Chambering around into the mat brain. Your brain is like a shotgun. I'll vouch for that.
Yeah, no, it's scattershot. Yeah. It's birdshot.
Anyways.
Birdshot brain.
I'm sorry, man. It happens. Like, it's not my fault.
You're going to stay in that seat.
Anyways, there's a TV show. It is a TV show, right?
Yes.
What channel is it on? I don't even know.
Fox.
Really?
Yeah.
Fox, just regular Channel 2.
Fox Channel Fox. 2. Sunday nights at 8 o'clock.
Comes over the air for free, Fox.
Mm-hmm. But they also run it on National Geographic Channel, and they run on a couple cable Fox affiliates.
And it's called Cosmos. Now, give me a rundown of what Cosmos is, because I've seen some tweets about it and stuff, but I'm not quite familiar.
Cosmos was a 1979-1980 television show, miniseries.
Look at all that sugar.
Produced and hosted. The audience can't see that.
I'm showing
Matt. I can't even see it.
Can't you see the sugar in the bottom?
No, I can't, and I'm glad you interrupted my explanation of this.
I'm sorry, I was marveling at the amount of sugar that was in the bottom of my coffee.
That's okay, you can marvel to yourself.
I marveled out loud. We're doing a podcast.
Okay.
For Pete's sake, geez, go ahead.
By the way, the two best Marvel superheroes are out loud and to myself. Marvel out loud, marvel to myself. What you just said there.
Okay.
Joke there.
That's funny. I like that.
It's a little play on words, I'm sure. I'm sure listeners are laughing right now because, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure they are.
It's a little.
I'm sure that of all the things our listeners are probably doing right now, laughing at your joke about marveling out loud is definitely what they're doing.
It's a little thing I do called humor, Addison. You should give it a try sometime.
Maybe I should.
Yeah.
Please, go ahead.
Anyway.
Should I tell the joke I told you off the air?
No.
Yeah, no, I shouldn't. You're right.
No, you should.
It's a terrible joke.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
Why even bring it up if you're not going to tell it?
It's filthy.
Yeah.
It's really bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's very disturbing. It's on a very disturbing topic.
Yeah. He told it to me and I immediately threw up.
That's true. You did.
It was like a constant string of throw up for like a solid 60 seconds.
Yep. Yep.
Just bleh.
It was a very gross joke.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, go ahead with Cosmos.
Okay.
It's a TV show.
It's a TV show.
1979.
The original series aired in 1979, 1980. I believe those are the years, I'm pretty sure. Hosted by Carl Sagan, who is a cosmologist and astronomer.
Author and all that.
Author, philosopher. A lot of people use the term scientist to describe Carl Sagan.
But that should be used loosely?
No, he was a scientist, but I don't think that sums up the magnitude of his work. I think he was a cosmologist, which is a scientist who studies the entire cosmos, the universe as a whole. But I think he was also a philosopher. You can equate him to a lot of the people doing TED Talks now.
Right.
But that was a lot of what he did, traveling around, giving lectures, and breaking down these large scientific and philosophical concepts about the universe into something that everyone could understand. And that's why Cosmos, the original series, was so popular, because what it did was he started out just talking extemporaneously kind of about the universe, and it's just him on screen giving these examples of the Big Bang and of science and of how the universe came into being and how we came into being.
Right.
And the whole story, Cosmos, is a story of humanity. It's a story of how we came to be here.
Right.
So it doesn't just, it's not just a science program, but it's a program that really does help to give people the information that they need to answer the who, what, where, when, and why questions about humanity.
Right.
Who we are, what we came from, where we're going.
Okay.
Okay. So it's not, so when people talk about it as a scientific program or a scientific documentary, I don't see it as that. I see it as more of
philosophical.
But it's giving context. And once again, context is key. It's giving context to the population on a large scale about science and about what happened, where we came from. It's giving a population that's largely ignorant of science, and I think that today we're more ignorant of science than we were 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when Cosmos was first on the air. Mm-hmm. I think this is something even more needful now, because it's not about persuading one side or the other that evolution is right or wrong. It's not about about making everybody out there into atheists.
Right.
Okay. It's about giving people context for biology and humanity and where physical things came from.
And if I could jump in real quick and just say something that you're well aware of, but I don't know that our listeners necessarily are. Mm-hmm. And this kind of tags along to the episode that we had two episodes ago where we talked about kind of you and I and what we believe and where we come from in terms of you know, our religious viewpoints.
Yeah.
I really feel like the question of whether or not there was a Big Bang or a literal six-day creation, okay, mm-hmm. if you put those two on opposite ends of the spectrum mm-hmm. And kind of say, well, either this happened or this happened, okay, which, again, is maybe even closed-minded to begin with. But if you put those kind of on opposite ends of the spectrum as one or the other, and you question, and the question of which one of those is true is so closely tied into whether or not a God or God, however you look at that, exists, mm-hmm. I don't like that. I'm not a fan of that. I hate the way those are tied in together, and I think you do too.
Yeah, I do.
Because there's no... And maybe this is just, I know more about God than the average person. I don't know. But I just, I don't feel like an all-powerful, all-knowing God who at the core of it wants to pursue a relationship with humanity that he created and glorify himself. I don't think he really cares whether we believe one way or the other as to where the universe came here.
I do.
But I don't think he cares.
That if God exists, he cares whether or not we believe the truth. And but I don't think six-day creationism is not the truth.
But
it's not the truth.
I don't think he cares in terms of the relationship. Does that make sense? Like, I don't, like, in the grander scheme of things...
I think that whether or not you believe in six-day creationism versus Big Bang cosmology, I think that does kind of determine how you believe in your belief system, because it reveals your idea and your mindset about science and about God as a whole, right. And how you approach the why question of life, whether you're approaching it from a dogmatic position, which six-day creationism, you start with Scripture,
uh-huh.
Okay, which for a lot of arguments isn't a bad thing.
Right.
Okay, is a good thing, actually. For this argument, no, it's not, because there's no way to verify the authenticity of the first five chapters of Genesis. Mm-hmm. There just isn't. From creation to Noah,
it's a narrative. It's a story that was written down. Right.
It's even so, there are ways of confirming the information in Exodus. Going back to archaeological records in Egypt, things like that, and
right.
in Mesopotamia at the time. There are ways to verify
the crucifixion, even.
The crucifixion,
right.
The prophets, the Davidic kingdom, things like that. There are ways to verify what happened in the rest of the Bible.
Right.
Pretty much from an archaeological or anthropological point of view, you can say that, yes, these things historically happened.
Right.
Okay.
Whether they mean what the Bible says they mean,
yeah.
is up to the to
is up to theology,
right.
But on a factual basis, that yes, most of these things happened, and you can confirm it. However, first five chapters of Genesis, no, you can't,
right?
Because there's no archaeological record from that time, and it's very well there is, but it doesn't support the thesis put forward in the first five chapters of Genesis,
right?
The extended ages of man, six-day creationism, things like that. I think that's. That Genesis, at no point in time does it say evening and morning were the first day. In the Hebrew, it says the evening and morning were the first period of time. It's the same word that's used in Daniel to describe the time, times, and half a time of
right,
the last days of Revelation. It's not a specific day.
Is probably the second most debated thing in the Bible, by the way.
Yeah.
It, for those that are unfamiliar with Christianity or faith or theology or Christian theology, probably the first one is the creation, and probably the second one then is what's happening at the end.
The beginning and the end.
We're obsessed with how we got here, and we're obsessed with where we're going.
That's one of the reasons why I swing towards agnostic end of the spectrum, because when you have an entire religion who can't really get the beginning and the end of the script correct,
right,
from a theological standpoint,
right,
and I have disagreements with the
popular
with Genesis and Revelation. I have major different disagreements with most theories regarding those two things.
Yeah,
from a Christian standpoint. But yeah,
But see, again, maybe this is the final point that we should make on this. But
we haven't even started talking about the actual show yet.
I know.
The actual
cosmos, I know, and that's
what the actual controversy is over this thing.
But to me, at the core of it, for someone who. Because if you don't want to believe in God, or you don't believe in God, and it doesn't matter to you, then who gives a rip what the Bible says?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and which to me is why our atheism is so confounding, because it's like it's come from an attacking point of view or something like that, where it's like, why does it matter?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you let people believe whatever they want to believe?
Yeah.
That's exactly what you're doing. And anyways, but I said that to say, to me, the core of belief in Christian theology comes from faith.
Yeah.
Especially in the big picture things. And I think that's even evidenced in the Bible when it talks mm-hmm. about the relationship aspect of it, because it's not about understanding every aspect of creation or the end times, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't studied Revelation or the end time. I've read through it, you know, cover to cover, but I don't. If you were to ask me what's going to happen at the end, I can give you some basic general ideas and kind of what Scripture seems to say. But if you were to ask me exactly what that means, I couldn't tell you. And I don't know. I'm okay with that. My faith mm-hmm. is in my relationship with Jesus Christ, and in that, well, I don't need to worry about what's coming, right?
Yeah.
In a certain sense. So to me, faith is the great equalizer in terms of what you see in the Bible for a Christian and other things that would be different than that,
yeah.
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a broad generalization.
I guess I would be the opposite of that, in that I don't think that your faith... I think faith is contained in a microcosm of you.
Right.
Okay, faith is completely self-contained.
Sure.
Within the individual.
Yeah.
Therefore, your faith has no bearing on my life.
Right.
Absolutely none. Which is...
And I shouldn't attempt to make it so.
Exactly.
Right.
Which is where I get off on the government is about protecting rights and not enforcing morality.
Right.
Okay? Because I don't believe that a religious system should be enforcing or creating laws to enforce its own specific morality.
Right.
I think that there are some things, there are two types of morality. Just like there's two types of evolution, there's a macroevolution and a microevolution. We have a general morality and a individual morality.
Mm-hmm.
General morality says that it's wrong to kill you.
Right. It's wrong to kill people and rape kids.
Exactly.
General morality.
Okay. Individual morality says that
it's wrong to drink.
It's wrong to skip church.
Right. Those
or it's wrong to wear a thong.
Or smoke swishers.
Exactly. And from a comfort standpoint...
All of which are wrong, by the way.
Yeah, from a comfort standpoint, there no one can tell me that wearing a thong is wrong. I mean, it just... It holds the grundle.
But
it separates the butt cheeks.
But breathes it, just right.
It's... And it makes me feel sexy. And I like that feeling.
Yeah.
You know, I like it. I like feeling sexy. I think everybody likes feeling sexy.
And who doesn't like the scent of grape swishers?
Exactly.
Not one single person.
And drinking.
And
skipping
drinking,
church.
And skipping church.
The four best things in life. Swishers. Drinking. Skipping church. And a thong gently caressing your grundle while separating the butt cheeks.
Which can all happen on the right Sunday morning.
Oh, man.
You could just skip church. Wear a thong.
No. It's
drink.
It's a segue from awesome Saturday night into a peaceful Sunday morning.
Yeah. Right.
Just wake up and your first thought is, I'm going to skip church.
Right.
And then you look
slip
for
into that
yeah.
thong.
Well, you've already you have a thong on from Saturday night because I mean it's Saturday night. You're partying.
Oh, right.
You know?
Sure. Yeah.
Anyway, Neil deGrasse Tyson,
back on topic.
The host of this round of Cosmos, who is wonderful speaker, brilliant scientist. And there's actually a connection between Carl Sagan and the first Cosmos and Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Okay.
When, kind of a famous story now, but he's been saying it a while. But Neil deGrasse Tyson, when he was a kid, growing up, I think in Philadelphia, he actually wrote to Carl Sagan, wrote a letter to Carl Sagan asking him questions and saying that he was an inspiration, blah, blah, blah. Carl Sagan wrote back, said, if you're ever in the New York or upstate New York area, you should look me up or whatever it was. And so he happened to be in town for some sort of school event. So he went actually to go meet Carl Sagan and stopped at a bus stop. Okay. And he had missed his meeting with Carl Sagan for some reason. So he was at the bus stop trying to catch a bus back to back home. And he had Carl Sagan's phone number. So he decides, well, I'll just give him a call, call him up. So he calls him up. Carl says, Sagan says, hey, and this is Neil deGrasse Tyson when he was like 17, okay?
Right.
High school senior. Budding scientist.
Right.
And Carl Sagan says, I'll be right there. Drives down to the bus station, picks him up, takes him back to his house. They have dinner together, stays the night over at Carl Sagan's house, and then goes back in the morning. But it was such an amazing story to see how one scientist's love for teaching people and making disciples, which is how the best scientific ideas are birthed, which is one person taking the time to make an impact in another person's life on an individual relationship base, which is why I despise megachurches and a lot of other things. But I digress. Anyway, the point is, Neil deGrasse Tyson kind of grew up on Cosmos and sort of a descendant of that
era.
That idea,
right,
of philosophical science and philosophical cosmology that knows and understands the limitations of science.
Yeah.
And understands that it can't answer all those questions, so you have to turn to philosophy.
And to me, that not understanding it, like, that next step, I mean, again, going back to the F word, mm-hmm, that's faith. And that's there's
no,
so much more,
it's not faith.
But there's so much more in commonality there that takes faith just as much as
no, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't.
Going beyond where science stops, of course it does.
Yeah.
That's what that is faith.
Yeah. But just because I might believe in a philosophical idea, and
yeah, you have faith in that.
I don't know. That is my best working model of how the universe works. So my philosophy to me is not what I believe in. It is my best working model of my best model, my best idea of how the universe works. I have no belief in that it will save my soul, that it will give me absolution, that it will give me peace of mind. All I believe is that is how it works.
Okay, I see what you're
saying.
That
is not faith.
I see the difference.
That's the difference between belief and faith. Belief is knowing and understanding a system and then believing that system is correct.
Right.
Faith is observing and knowing and understanding a system and then believing that something else on top of that system is correct, or that a certain part of that system will affect my life in a way that is supernatural, or that is out of the ordinary, or that is just ordinary. But faith implies a personal belief, just like we said a couple weeks ago. God said it, I believe it, and that
settles
it. Isn't
cosmology, though? It's the same thing, though.
Like, no, cosmology is the blanket term used for the study of the universe
as
a whole.
Well, right, but the beliefs that I have on that are still personal. They're not shared by everyone. So what do you mean?
Yeah, like, they are shared. If you're a cosmologist and you believe the standard cosmological model, the standard cosmological model,
right,
then you're not believing that on faith. You're believing in it. You're believing it that it is true. But I'm trying to differentiate between what I believe and what I believe by faith. Okay, because mm-hmm, there are two different belief systems. What I believe scientifically,
right,
I don't take that on faith. I look at the universe, I see that these are the facts surrounding the situation,
right,
and then I believe in that because of facts, because of what I can observe. What I believe in by faith is that this will somehow affect my life in some sort of supernatural way or an ordinary way that changes me. You right. see, faith is personal. Belief is not personal. Belief is anti-personal. It's belief is the solid, okay? And right. faith is the vapor. They're both just as real, but faith makes it applicable to me,
mm-hmm.
and faith makes me the center of the belief system. Mm-hmm. So you say, I believe by faith.
This
are the center of that statement. When you say something, I believe that this is real, you're saying that that is the center of the statement.
Right.
If you can kind of understand, and I am using the I term in both those situations, but understand, say that I believe this to be real, I have faith that this is real.
Right.
And
there is a difference in that.
Right. Yeah, you're saying that your action of faith determines the realness of it.
Right.
Rather than the realness of it determining the realness of it.
See, but there's to me, faith should come from a place where it's based on some semblance of fact. I mean, faith.
No, because faith. The definition of faith according to Scripture is believing in things unseen, believing in non-fact.
Right.
That's the definition of faith. Is what does Scripture say about faith? Faith is believing.
Faith is the. I should know this.
The something of things not unseen, right? Of things not seen?
Right.
So, yeah.
Faith is the evidence of...
Yes, faith is the evidence of things unseen.
Right. Hebrews 11:1. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the mm-hmm. evidence of things not seen.
Yes. So
the substance
instead
of... Right,
so,
right,
in a courtroom,
right.
instead of submitting, these facts lead me to believe this thing, you're saying, my faith leads me to believe this thing.
Right. Yeah.
So that's where the terms are different, and that's where I think that we need to, before we have any argument in the world anywhere anymore, before we have any sort of discussion, you have to do two things. You have to define your terms.
Right.
And you have to provide context. And if you don't do either of those things, it's the equivalent in today's day and age of lying.
Right.
It is. You have to define your terms, so when you say evolution and when I say evolution, we both know and have an understanding that it's the same thing.
Right.
Okay? And if it's not, we need to find other
to
terms
figure out
to
what
use.
It is. Right.
That's one of the things. Big things in this debate is that when science says the word evolution, say an atheist says it's evolution,
right?
They mean a specific thing,
right?
And when a creationist says evolution, they mean something else,
right?
So it's not the same term that's
right.
being used.
Well, and to me, that's the, like what you just said. Like that's a part of so much of the problem, mm-hmm. as it were, between what a Christian believes from a theological standpoint and what an atheist believes, and why both sides, or certain subgroups of both sides, not everybody across the board, but certain subgroups of both sides are so vehement against the other,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
because they think there's no overlapping at all. And I see a lot more overlapping with the scientific theory of evolution and the Bible,
yeah.
and it doesn't affect my faith, the mm-hmm. things that I believe in terms of, for example, a personal relationship with Jesus Christ,
yeah.
or how I treat the others around me. You
yeah.
know, whether that in the grander scheme of things has to do with evolution or not, to me is not A, that important, or B, what even Christ himself told me as the Christian, a believer, to be a part of.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, he had a lot more of a point in terms of, you know, go into all the world and make disciples, not go into all the world and assure them of a 6-day creation, for example.
Because yeah.
yeah. he could have said that. He could have said anything there. You know, but the greatest thing that he told us to do was to, you know, love your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah.
Sums up all the other commandments.
Yeah.
You know, which in that religious context, even saying that about the Ten Commandments, was the importance of that even is lost into today. The mm-hmm. fact that Jesus said that was the one that all the other commandments, because religion at the time was based on those commandments, especially in the Jewish culture there. That's, everything was based on the commandments. So when he said all the commandments are summed up in this one statement, this one idea, that's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of commandments, let's go back to the first commandment. Mm-hmm. You know what the first commandment is?
Thou shalt have no other gods before me?
No. Not, I'm not talking like Ten Commandments.
Bad Christian. Not going.
What was
to
the first thing God ever told people to do?
Oh,
be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth, and subdue it.
Genesis. Okay. Yeah.
Now, challenge to all the listeners who.
Well, see, I am going to heaven because I'm about to have a baby.
Challenge to all the listeners out there.
A couple days, as a matter
of
fact,
who are interested in doing some more research on this topic. I urge you to pull out your Bibles, break out your Strongs, and do some good exegetical work on that passage. Be right. Fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. It doesn't mean what you think it means.
No, it does not. We've talked about this.
Yeah. Basically, what it's saying to you is
to know
be
it.
Fruitful. So be productive.
Right.
Fill the earth and subdue it. But subdued has a connotation of conquering
and understanding.
Conquering and ruling. So you conquer and then you rule, but ruling correctly as a steward. And not as a tyrant,
right?
So, that to me, that verse says more about the global warming debate than anything that anybody who denies global warming can say. I think most people who deny global warming fall on the right of the conversation,
probably, right?
And thus into the religious aspects, because you can't because separate Republicans from religion at this point. You can't do it. It's
that's the thing.
Not possible.
Real quick, that whole global warming thing. Whether the facts, quote unquote, that are presented on that are true or not,
mm-hmm.
that certain types of
they are
of man-made hold on
they are true
that certain types of man-made gases are causing some sort of
11,000 independent effect. 11,000 independent studies from 1991 to 2011.
Hold on, whether those are true or not,
95% confirm that global warming is happening.
The responsibility of someone who is a Christian and on the right side of things in that aspect is to be a good steward of what God has given you, which is this earth.
Yeah.
And so your main concern should be taking care of what God has given you in the best way that you know how, in the best way that you can.
Yeah.
Period. That has nothing to do with they're very little to do with the fact of whether that's true or not, and things are actually heating up to a point of a global whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
Anyways, that being said, we didn't talk much about Cosmos.
No, we didn't. But there's a lot. There's some blowback from the show, obviously. The big voice. Being Ken Ham in Answers in Genesis,
mm-hmm.
saying that,
and what's the main point there? What are they?
They're not disagreeing with any of the science on the. Well, they are disagreeing on their website. If you go and you read their articles, Answers in Genesis dot, you find some articles and they've been reading. But the big thing that they've been saying isn't that they disagree with the science so much as they want equal time given to creationist theory, 6-day creationism.
That
a show about science giving equal time to 6-day creationism. Let's just give some silence and let that sink in.
I would think that it would be possible is even a stretch, but I...
No, it's completely impossible.
Well, I just feel like it should...
Like we don't have to give equal time to Vishnu when we're talking about Jesus Christ, do we? Like why
well, right.
why do your religious beliefs factor into it?
I don't
in
really
a, in
see...
a program that's about science and about contextualizing the humanity's place in the cosmos, in the universe, then why do we need to talk about 6-day creationism if it's not something that natural science supports? The science of the natural world does not support a 6-day creation. It does not.
Well, and if you think it does, let's say okay,
it doesn't. It doesn't matter what you think.
But
the truth
is, if you think it does, then why not just go make a web series or whatever you want and say, and call it a response to Cosmos.
One of the things that Ken Ham says in the last part. Not Ken Ham.
I mean, it's a free country, right? Can't you just
yeah. In episode, Dr. Elizabeth Mitchell, in her review of episode 1, says something to that effect that What was it? I've lost it now. But she said something to that effect that...
Why not just have your own platform?
Well, that she basically bitches that they don't have enough money to have the slick, big-budget production of Cosmos.
It's like, and whose fault is
yes,
that?
You do. Yes, you
well,
do.
Well, and whose fault is that, even if you don't?
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah. Didn't their theme park, their Androids and Genesis theme park, didn't that cost like $50 million to make? Ark Encounter, it's called. Here we go. Opening up a link to that on their website. It cost somewhere in the ballpark of like $50 million to make. Like, I don't see how that's like chump change.
I don't know.
You know? And but they are doing it. It's just no one's seeing them because... You know,
well, people are going to search out and see what they want to see.
The only channel that's going to buy religious programming is the History Channel, unfortunately. That really irked me when they had their the Bible or whatever it was, miniseries.
Right.
Yeah, that really irked me.
Why?
Because it's a part of history, but it's speculative history, which is all the History Channel does anymore. It's speculative history about
Jesus. All their shows are. All the shows are reimaginings and poetic licenses about every historical event, whether
and
it's
it really, really
Christ or Nero
it really, really
or whatever.
It really irks me when it does.
Right.
When they do that. And that's one of the reasons I don't like the History Channel. And they show all the good programming is on H2, which you have to subscribe to the better cable package to get.
Yeah. So like, they make more money.
Yeah, I guess so. But like all their good documentaries, all the interesting stuff. The only thing that is saving History Channel, in my opinion, is Vikings, the TV show Vikings at this point. It's a pretty good show.
Anyways.
But once again, that's completely artistic license. You're not presenting this as fact. And if you watch the Bible documentary that History Channel did, it's all presented as fact. It's presented that these events actually happened in this way
and so
for these supernatural reasons.
But so is something like Vikings, though, right?
No, it's not. Like They make it clear at the beginning of the show that it's a dramatization.
I thought that was made clear with the Bible too.
No,
the miniseries at all. No. It wasn't said at all.
No, I don't believe there was a spoiler in front that said, "Hey, this is just what some people believe."
Huh.
So yeah.
Well, anyways, we've gotten way off topic and sort of spiraled into a lot of different things here. But anyways, I think at the core of it. Go ahead.
The one thing I just want to say about Answers in Genesis, their review of Cosmos, because they are the ones kind of beating the drum the loudest about the show Cosmos is how it's not giving equal time. But the header of their review for episode one says, Cosmos, a space-time odyssey, claims its aim is to promote scientific literacy, but it takes a metaphysical statement as its theme. Yes. Yes, it does. Because... that is what cosmology is about. It's not about getting to, it's not just about the science of the universe. It's cosmology at its core is also about understanding the philosophy behind the universe, and the philosophy of where we came from, where we're going.
And to me, God fits in with that.
Yes, because Big Bang cosmology proves the question. What are we? Where are we coming from? What is that noise?
It proves
the question.
Right.
That the question, where do we come from, was valid. Because if there was no Big Bang, if we lived in a stagnant state universe, the question, where did we come from and why, and how long have we been here, would be moot. Because the term would be forever. It would be infinite.
Right.
So you wouldn't have to really understand.
Well, see, to me, the next thing is the fact that we're only here for a certain amount of time, or have been here for a certain amount of time, indicates, on a grander scale, that we're here for a reason.
Yeah.
Maybe that's too big of a leap. I don't know.
Yeah.
But to me, that's what it says.
Yeah. After, back in 1968, after Watkins proved that cosmic microwave background radiation existed, there was a telescope array that was built to measure it, and to look at it. Completely in a big picture, and it was called the Kobe Array. Anybody out there should do some reading. Any creationists out there, do some reading from George Smoot. George Smoot was the head scientist of the Kobe background or the Kobe telescope array. He led the team of scientists that worked on that, and atheists when he's coming in, and a Christian coming and a theist coming out. A Christian coming out because he saw. on a grand scale, firsthand, the thumbprint of a creator.
Universally.
Yes. Microwave background radiation means that there was a Big Bang, which means that the origin of the universe isn't a scientific one, is a philosophical one. So, right. Yeah. I think that the Big Bang does more to support a creationism,
a
theory for creationism than six-day creationism does.
Right.
So, to me, there's...
But then that also leads into the question, which we probably need to have on a third episode now that I guess we're going on an hour and a half. But to me, that leads into, then what's up with the six-day creation? Because if scripture, and again, I'm literally going to ask this and we're going to end. Like, we don't have time to discuss this. But if we believe that scripture is inspired by God, right?
Uh-huh.
As it says that it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Then is that a telling of the story? So, okay, here's how humans will get it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Maybe God was like, this is the best thing that'll make sense.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys get this in your human brains.
Oh, here's where 6 day.
Or is it metaphor? Is the whole thing metaphorically told to where the 6 days do relate to certain periods of creation?
Mm-hmm.
Very possible.
Yeah.
Okay. Or is the book of Genesis like dug out of somewhere else and not part of scripture?
Real quick.
Or something like that.
Real quick 2-minute explanation of the whole situation. If you ask a Jewish priest,
uh-huh.
Okay, a priest of Judaism, if you ask him...
An Orthodox... actual
Orthodox Jew.
Right.
Someone who's a priest.
Penny pinching, wearing the hat, just whole bit.
If you ask him, how many days was the universe created in,
uh-huh.
He wouldn't tell you 6 days.
Right.
Because Orthodox Jews don't believe that.
Right.
The Jews, but the Jewish people,
uh-huh.
Orthodox Jews, have never, ever once in their history believed in a six-day literal creation.
Right.
Okay. Here's where it came from. It came from the Protestant Reformation.
Right.
Okay, the 16th and the 17th centuries, and later into the 18th
century. Believing the Bible
centuries.
Word for word kind of thing?
What happened was you had a bunch of people who were just teaching, who had population that was just teaching itself how to read, okay? You just had the advent of the printing press. Now you had Bibles in people's hands, and they could read it for themselves. And they came up with a lot of these philosophies we believe now in the American Evangelical Church.
Right.
Like 6 day creationism. You're looking at the Bible literally, they were looking at the Bible and reading it literally and believing it literally with no historical context, no theological context for what people had believed previously to that about what that scripture was saying. So that's where it came from. It came from people who were misinformed and who looked at the scripture and then just said, okay, this is what it's saying, so I'm going to believe it at face value rather than understanding the subtext or the context of what they were reading.
Which I think is such a mistake, because even your most popular, pick out your most popular quote unquote celebrity pastor that you want today, like the whole point of having a pastor and preaching is to provide
context.
Right. And to mm-hmm. and to
theological
look at it
context.
And to look at it beyond reading, because we're no longer in a time where you can't have the Bible, right? Everybody can mm-hmm. have the Bible, right?
Yeah.
You know, so you can go read it on your own all you want.
But it's
the teaching and the making disciples and the explaining the meaning behind it that is so important to the Christian life.
Yeah.
But then why do we not want to do that to the Genesis story?
This belief system came around in a era of humanity, an era of the church, when the church wasn't trusted very much by normal people. You had 1,000 years of indulgences and worshiping icons and
which
things like that.
Yeah,
right. and worshiping icons and indulgences and saint worship and things like that. And incredible amounts of corruption in the church, and people of the Reformation didn't want to trust their church leaders.
Yeah.
Which is Martin Luther's big sin. He made everybody not trust people who they were...
Anyways.
Yeah, anyways.
This is the end of Give That Some Thought.
This is the end. No more diatribes. Although enjoy venting on some of the things that I said. Some of the things that I espoused, honestly, they are life philosophies for me. So...
Well, yeah, and I think the big thing to remember is that it's all very personal, which I think explains why it's such a hotly debated topic.
Yeah, that's why it is so controversial.
Because everybody, it's so right for me, and everyone else needs to get it.
Yeah, because if you get proved wrong, then it shatters your world. It breaks down your worldview, and then you all of a sudden you have to start working for the truth again, and no one wants to do that anymore. So
right. And it's easy to just grab somebody else's truth and, well, this is mine, and okay, now we're all good. And I don't really have to think about it. And I can worry about things like, you know, having the latest phone and taking selfies with my friends.
Yay, selfies with friends. It's the best way to be. You and me taking a selfie. Taking a selfie on Oscar night.
Give that some thought. We'll see you next week. I will probably be a father next week.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, yeah. This is the last give that some thought with, just being a husband.
We might take off next week. I'm not sure. It depends on
probably
when the baby comes.
Yeah.
And then we'll have to get him or her on here as a guest as quickly as possible. So we can do that.
Yep.
Look forward to that. Look forward to me being a dad. I'm looking forward to me being a dad.
Yep. Anyway, you can congratulate Addison on Twitter about his new dadhood. He's at Addison Todd. I'm Suburban_Wizard on Twitter.
It's true. Yeah. We're available at tripodbroadcasting.com/givethatsomethought.
Yep. You can look us up on Audible. Go to tripodbroadcasting.com. Click on the Audible banner. You can download a free audiobook.
Get a free audiobook.
Support the show.
Support the show. You get a free audiobook. It's free.
Yep.
The whole book.
Just signing up for Audible.
Yep.
Anyway, that's been a show. Thanks for listening, guys.
We'll see you next week. I'll probably be a dad.
Yeah.
Maybe next week.
See everybody out there in audio land. Bye.
This has been a production of Tripod Broadcasting.